Blog Talk Radio.
And it is an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to bring to you this literary festival, Season 5. This is Episode 2. My guest will be Kathy Wright Lewis. She is the director of Power in the Pen, the CEO of Looking Glass LLC, and Lit for Life Language Learning LLC. And I'm so excited because our Tribe Family Channel Literary Festival 2023 is about to happen, and you're invited. Call 563-999-3778, and if you would like to speak to our guest or host, press 1 when we bring the questioning to an end, we will open up the lines for our callers. Gumbo for the Soul Publications, our feature authors and sponsors, would like you to help spread the love of reading as the key to learning. So join us and bring the kids. You can also listen online to our archives via blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. All of our guests will be reading and expressing how their love for learning and the written word helped them develop into the authors they've become. It's moderated by yours truly. I am the CEO of Tribe Family Channel and Gumbo for the Soul International, home of Gumbo for the Soul Publications. These shows are sponsored in part by our guests and businesses in partnership with Tribe Family Channel. So we want to shout out not only Kathy Wright Lewis for helping us come live on Tribe, but also Justin Brown, the author of Shattered Bones. This is a book about marriage. What seemed to be the beautiful portrait to the outside world is actually the perfect storm that causes dissemination to all that it touches. Will bones shatter or will they heal and become stronger than before? Shattered Bones is on Amazon and wherever books are sold. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please help me welcome Kathy Wright Lewis. Hello, Sister Kathy. How are you?
Peace and love from the Republic of Brooklyn, New York. How are you?
Hey, Brooklyn in the building, y'all. I'm blessed, sis. I'm blessed. It's always so exciting to have you come to the platform. Yours is a very interesting story. And, of course, the way you weave in and out of your novels, bringing, you know, enlightenment to our people and our plight through these stories that you weave are just amazing. I'm still in love with the fact that you have so eloquently brought to our platform before about the hidden burial grounds, African burial grounds in New York. And so I just remain fascinated with that element inside of your writing and research. So before we get started, tell us a little bit about where you're from and, well, this is getting started. Tell us a little bit about where you're from, and then we'll go into your love for learning in the written word.
Okay. So first of all, thank you for having me. Since I'm so proud of the work that you're doing, what you're bringing to the community, and the way
thank
that you,
you
reach out all the way around the world. We need this, and we really I'm from a community that inspired reading and writing all the time. Mm. You know, back in the day, I mean, we passed books around. You know, the thing was, what did you read this? You know, did you hear about this? You know, did you hear about that? You know, we were always sharing knowledge, and I don't know, you know, we depend on the internet. I know people go on YouTube and learn a lot, but we still need to read. We still need to read. There's a lot. So I grew up, I write about the community. I grew up in Brownsville, Brooklyn, which was the faith of the Black arts movement back in the 60s and the 70s. We were some of the first who, we just got finished having a Kwanzaa celebration, several in Brownsville. And we were one of the ones that started celebrating first here. We were directly connected to your side, to California, to Brother Karenga, and he sent the word here. And people, Mary Baraka, Yusef Iman, who I sat under, he taught, they were teaching us spoken word back then, and they were teaching us about how to be strong Black Afro-American people, because they sat under, of course, Malcolm X, you know, Minister Malcolm. So you know, we were taught, well, I thought everybody was learning about that. I thought everybody was doing that, but they weren't. But in Brownsville, it was going down. It was the spot. We had our first school, community-based schools, and where we had the very first black superintendent and black principals, and of course it inspired the first teacher strike, so they shut us all down, but they could never mm-hmm. change it because it had all started, you know, and it's wow. the reason why I became teacher. So Brownsville was on the map, you know. People see it now when they consider it one of the most dangerous places, although they are gentrifying, I must say that, you know, as dangerous mm-hmm. as it's supposed to be. So, but it was a very strong cultural community in Brownsville. So that's why I write what I write.
And it's just an honor and the historic value to what you write, where you're from, you know, keeping the torch lit, all of that is, it's just amazing. I'm just so enamored by that in and of itself. And, you know, I was close to, but I used to call her every now and then, and she will be honored in our upcoming Gumbo for the Soul 20th anniversary anthology. And that is my sweet, sweet Ruby Dee. And every time I hear about Brownsville and, you know, back mm-hmm. in the day, we're talking about back in the day when you mentioned passing yeah. around books. Oh, we going through high school here on the West Coast. You know, we didn't have the internet, and our thing was we would call dibs on a book that somebody else was reading and jam somebody else. Well, who has the book? Okay. We go hunt the person down and make sure that we have mm-hmm. dibs on that book when you finish it. This, and we were serious about that. And we would pass around. We passed around our paperback books at school and read them better than we read the actual school books. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, but going back to the love of reading and that expression, what is your earliest remembrance as a child growing up in school, and how the written word and reading impacted you or not? Because not all mm-hmm. of us gravitated to the written, you know, reading and the written word, and the trips yeah. to the library, and or, you know, not everyone had that exposure at home. So give us a profile about how you were introduced to reading and your expression and love for the written word from the earliest ages that you can remember, and then those experiences.
So, well, it's really interesting that since it was a battleground here in Brownsville, the schools were, the reason why we were fighting, because we didn't have any black teachers, and the schools were overcrowded, and the students weren't getting a full day of education. So my mother decided that she allowed us to be bused. So that's when they first started the busing program. So I went to school. We were integrating the schools. So we were mm-hmm. predominantly where we were wanted, and it was made clear. And in spite of that, I still was glad. I loved reading, and I learned to read quickly, and I loved the book. But we had the Dick and Jane stuff and Spot and with no black people in the book, and I'm like, how come there aren't any black people in the book? There's nobody that look like me. But I was one of those kids who went to the library all the time. So the librarian started giving me books, and the first book that I really read that had black people in it was Daddy Was a Number Runner, and I was thrilled with that book. I even got to meet her one year, Margaret Walker, and I believe, and I just
wow.
I love. A little black girl, and it was an urban story, and I knew what a number runner was, and you know, I couldn't believe the story was so much like my life. I could see our characters, and I think that's the first story that really touched me, and I wanted more. And there weren't a whole lot, but then I would look for them. And, you know, of course, I loved the poetry early on. Of course, Gwendolyn Brooks was my big favorite at the time. You know, those are the ones, yeah.
Wow, wow. I had to chuckle because you took me back to childhood with Fun with Dick, books, Dick and Jane and Spot, and, you know, and you're right. Yeah. We didn't see ourselves in any of those books. And eventually, you know, the Dr. Seuss books or, anything Charlie Brown, you know, we didn't see our stories and our faces weren't mirrored to us, the magazines that were out. So when our urban fiction writers, Donald Goins and Slim, what's his name? Iceberg Slim. You know, these were the books that we could relate to our Black experience. We didn't have a dog named Spot running around with us playing in any grassy yard, you know. And so the experiences of early education, going to the library, opened up another world for those of us that gravitated in that way. For me, I loved reading books from other lands, learning about other cultures and continents. And so the library experience, I would say, and having books at home, my mother had a lot of books at home. So how was the written word expressed or reading and learning expressed in the home life? Was it supported in the home life as well as, go ahead.
Absolutely. As my mother would have us read the Reader's Digest, and she would have us read the, and she would time us, you know, it would, because you had to learn how to read quickly. What was it, and I loved the stories, but I was always trying to read, as I don't know why it was, she was timing us, but you had to read in a certain amount of time. She had learned that would develop your skills and make you a better reader. So and she taught us how to move our fingers across the page so that we could catch every word, but read with speed reading. That's what it was, speed reading. So she was very much, and she was a young mother also. You know, my mother had five kids by the time she was 25, but she was not playing. You know, we were going to get a good education. What we had to do. Yep. And she made sure we learned more at home. And then because of the community I was in and civil rights movement, it was big and everybody was marching. And so we learned early. So we were writing picket signs. I tell you that much. We were writing out little poems about people trying to keep us from school So we were doing like a lot of poetry and spoken word, like I said, you know, very early, and it was a very very literary community. It was literature was very, very big, and we were writing very young, and voicing out, you know, and making our voices heard. You know, we had to be saying, you know how it was. We used to sing before every event the Black National Anthem, and We Shall Overcome, you know, and then we got into our arts, and then we were performing. It was just part of who we are. You had to practice oration. You had to be a speaker and let your voice be heard. That was very important, very young.
And culturally speaking, and I just love your response. Thank you so much. For those of you who are just tuning in, my guest is Kathy Wright Lewis. She is the director of Power in the Pen, also CEO to Looking Glass LLC and Lit for Life Language Learning LLC. And we can see why she is the head and at the helm of these entities, just from what you were saying right there. And what I wanted to also say is culturally, the written word and oration and the expressions of even dance and singing was interwoven into our activism and our stance against the racist, you know, powers that be in this country. So when you're looking in a, you know, a place like, you know, the East Coast, New York, the West Coast, and we had the Panthers and, you know, and of course we, like, we had Malcolm, you know, we had evolutionaries that are about progress for our people. We being held down to a certain level, the only expression was the power and the pen, just like your entity is named. Right. That was where we got our power, through the pen.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. And I would be remiss to leave out the last poets, because when they first started, you know, they were in Brownsville too. They were, you know, Abby Adun and all of that. We would go to the park to hear them. They would be, you know, outside across the street, and if there was an event going outside, you know, they were new and young back then. And so it was the norm to speak up and speak out. It became the norm, you know, to speak up, to speak out, to read and to share. And one of the other books I want to also be, I'd be remiss to mention that, what, even if people who, a brother who I'll never forget, he was on drugs, and he had a book in his hand, and he said to me, "I want you to read this book for me." And it was from Superman and Man, by J.A. Rogers, and he said, I can't read it right now, but you read it and tell me about it. Everybody's reading this book. And I probably was about 15 at the time, and I stayed up all night reading the book so I could tell him about it the next morning, and it changed my life. It changed my entire life. I didn't know that Black people had been, you know, that we ruled the world at one time. I didn't know about Herodotus, you know. I didn't know. I was like, what? And they had their white slaves. And, I mean, he dropped it all on me. It gave me a completely different perspective. It made me want to read even more. So I was on fire by that time. I was reading, and I was, you know, I wasn't writing as much. I was writing, like, mostly poetry. I wasn't writing any stories yet, but it really set me on fire.
Wow. And then another element of our artistic expressions that was very prominent on the East Coast, I believe you would be able to offer some perspective on the speakeasies.
Oh, yeah. There were many, and it's still, I mean, there was a revival of them back in the 80s also, but that's where, you know, I wasn't old enough to hang, to tell the truth, when everybody was going to the Gorilla, where all the poets performed all the time, you know, but that definitely was a big thing. People went to go hear what was going on. There was also, like, the revolutionaries, a lot of the people who helped to mold me. Once we lost power temporarily in the schools, we started our own schools, you know, and there was the East. And there's a video out about the East now, too. Lots of artists came through the East, and everything, and they had their own school, Yehuda Saksa, and it was open to the whole community. Mostly, then they shifted from Brownsville to more to Bed-Stuy, to Bedford-Stuyvesant. And oh my goodness, and of course, Mary Baraka was in Newark, New Jersey, so right across the water. So that was where everybody went to get some more. And I mean, it was the speakeasy to the 10th power, because M2MA and all kind of amazing that came up through there. Oh yeah.
Wow.
If you wanted to hear, for your arts, that's where you were.
You know, rest in peace to Ntume. And Amiri Baraka's mentee is who introduced you and I. He is the creator of Russell Simmons' Deaf Poetry Jam on HBO, Bruce George. So I wasn't going to say anything, and then, you know, you mentioned Amiri Baraka again, rest in power. So I said, okay, confirmation. Let me, you know, put that out there in the airwaves. But that is evolutionary in and of itself. And the marching orders, you know, came from the streets in terms of the written expressions of via the books that the aforementioned books, the speakeasies, the poetry, the drumbeat of our people. So as you grew, you know, on up through school and everything, what ultimately became the paradigm shift for you to go from poetry to, you know, essays, stories, and what have you? When did that switch over for you, where you expanded and further expounded on the subjects?
Thank you. My students, once I started teaching at Boys and Girls High School, and, you know, we had the books we had to teach, you know, you had the curriculum from the state, and there was nothing black on there. And my students, you know, they really expressed that they were tired of reading about dead white people, you know, they were great stories, you know, but they couldn't connect with them. They had nothing to do with them. So I started writing my own stories, and I said, okay, if you finish, you know, you finish this story, you know, and we'll read this, I have another story for you. So we get through the work that we had to do, and then I just started, the first story I wrote was called 1968, and 1968 was based on the day that Dr. King was shot, and I wrote about how it was really based on a true story. We had, we were going to the PS 108 and actually it's in East New York, which is now, you know, there aren't any white people there, but back then it was predominantly white. And they were supposed to be part of the program, and they were supposed to send some of their kids to our community. We were supposed to go to theirs. And their parents were protesting. And so we couldn't go to school that day because our parents were going up to fight for us. And those are the words we heard as kids. So I might have been about eight. And we were supposed to stay home. And we knew the bus route, so we decided our parents, we were going to go up there so we could see our parents fighting, you know, because that's what we thought was happening.
Wow.
We walked a couple of miles to get to this school in the streets, and me and maybe four other kids. And when we got there, we found out that we saw people with these picket signs, you know, with the N-words, go home niggas, they didn't want us there. And our parents will have their signs, and they were all going. And even though we were shocked to see our classmates' parents were there, even the crossing guard who smiled at us every day, and we thought she liked us, and she was out. It was all we were devastated. And I wrote about Dory, and then I wrote that on the way home, we thought our parents would be upset with us when they saw we were there, but they wanted to get us out of there. And we all got to the train and came home, and when we heard on the radio that Dr. King had been assassinated, and that of course had you know, that devastated us. That also, as kids, we were in the middle of this war. You know, but we were part of it. You know, we didn't realize we were soldiers. We didn't realize that we were just in it. We thought that that's just how it was, and I couldn't shake it as I got older. So once I wrote that story, I read it. My students loved it so much, I continued writing, and that turned into Mariah's Seed, so I wanted to answer questions like, I asked God, what do you do when your heart is so hurt from so much pain, so much devastation, so much hatred, you know, so much loss? What do we do then? How do we heal? you know, and I searched for that, and I found the answer, and that's what was my, that's my big point, my theme in the book, you know, we're spirits who never die, and we, what may appear to be lost here is never really lost. Our ancestors are with us, and they have our mm-hmm. backs. We have God. We have, you know, we're protected. All we have to do is ask for assistance, and we have it. And that's how, and that's what our ancestors knew. And we have to stop thinking that we're here and that we're alone, and that we're losing. We need to stop believing that we're losing.
Like that, you know, go ahead. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. What were you saying? That became what?
That was the emphasis, and since then, like every book has been an answer to questions like that: how to survive mm-hmm. here on Earth with what appears real, you know.
You know, and I love the interwoven spiritual piece of tapping into our ancestors, because we truly are on their shoulders, and they truly are present with us.
Absolutely.
And you know, the spirit of creation, whom I choose to call God, one mm-hmm. God. Many people have many names, but I say
yes.
God, and I truly know that not only the presence and the peace of God abides, but also the spiritual realm of just what you said, our ancestors. The spirit does not
yes.
die. The body dies, but the spirit lives. And
yes.
it is through divine direction that we actually follow the guidance set forth for our purpose. Your readings, the way you evoke upon, you know, your story, you can tell there's a spiritual connection and foundation mm-hmm. about you, and that foundation, I would also say, is rooted in activism, rooted in
yeah.
the beginning of the civil rights movement, for you to be able to unequivocally know when Dr. King was killed. And I will tell you, my mentor is the leader of the Tougaloo Nine. He was led, trained, and mentored by the late, great Medgar Wiley Evers. And when that man tells me about where he was grocery shopping in the store
mm-hmm.
when they said over the overhead, you know, speaker that Dr. King had been shot, and he just, you know, mm-hmm. zombie-like left his basket in the store.
Mm-hmm.
I was about 8 or 9, and I can remember, you know, seeing my grandmother crying, and I didn't know what happened
yeah.
to my matriarch. But in hindsight, I wrote about it in one of my books. It couldn't be anything other than when they took Dr. King. So I really, really want to thank you for everything that you have expressed. And I know that being an author, you have amassed some books. And so let us know how many books you have and give us the titles, and what will you be offering in your reading for us today?
Okay. Oh, thank you so much. And once again, so the book, and I am going to read from Mariah C. because this we just had 20th anniversary since I've written Mariah Seed, and I revised
oh, wow.
it, and it's the 20th anniversary. So Mariah Seed was the first one, and then I wrote Passion's Pride, Return
mm-hmm.
to the Dawning, and that one, that's the one that begins on 9/11, but
mm-hmm.
we go back in time. We go back in time because I it's very important to connect with our ancestors, and I wanted to be very clear that they are part of what's happening all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
mm-hmm.
then the third book, these are the novels, and the third book is I just finished Miracles, and Miracle blew my mind. Okay, I completely yielded it to spirit and allowed this story to be told, and Miracle is a miracle, and she answers what we need to do for today and for the future. So those are the novels. I have children's books. Mama Relly came to me when I reunited with my father years ago, and he told me the story about his grandmother who had been a great grandmother who had been a runaway slave, and actually were sitting on the where she had dug out, lived in a cave to so that she wouldn't be caught, and she even when slavery was over, he said they would bring her in whenever it got cold, but she preferred to be in the woods, in that cave where she felt safe, and she'd walk through the woods with a big fire, with a big torch, and no one would, you know, the animals didn't bother her, nothing. It moved me so much. I had to write this story. So I wrote that. It's a children's story, but I get to introduce, for me, I wanted a way of people to teach children about slavery without scaring them, but yet telling the truth. And the kids love the stories. The adults who get all besides themselves when they hear slavery, period. But the kids love it because she got away, you know. So they're like, she's running. She ran. She got away. I'm like, yes, that's right. So we made two about stories for Mama Relly. We have Ancestors and Sankofa, and we made them coloring books as well. And I have one book for middle school kids called Exodus 2055. And it's basically saying, you know, what's going to happen, you know, in the future here, you know. And it's interesting. The kids they love that when I read it. I read in schools, you know. I still visit, and teachers or principals ask me to come and read to the kids. And the kids really like the futuristic stuff. They like it a lot. So, you know, And I have from the writing workshop, we have four anthologies now. The first two don't have a particular name, but the third one is Heal America. And this last one we just did for this past year is it's really a moving, so many beautiful excerpts and poetry, you know, are in it. So we're a pal in the pen. If you look on our Facebook page, you'll see all of our books. They're all on Amazon. It's a beautiful group of people. Because of the pandemic, we got to stay home. Yeah, we were blessed to stay home and stay on. And we didn't miss a beat. We stayed every Saturday from 11 to 2. We're on there. Everybody's reading their work, and we started having open mics and stuff like that, so keep people entertained. So you know, they wouldn't be so down, and it's really been good. And because of that, now we have members all over the country, and a few from different parts of the world. So it's unbelievable what's happened.
Wow, it just sounds anointed. I mean, it really sounds like you are being used by God to make a real difference among men. The titles of your works and going back and weaving in and out of our history, you have to have a real in-depth and rife breadth and depth of our ancestral African history to be able to do that, because even though it's fiction, you still have to have your facts straight. And so I commend you for what you're bringing forth. That is truly power in the pen. Kudos to the workshop and everything you're doing with regards to keeping that select group together, those that are, you know, and then spreading internationally like that. But for those of you that are able to meet on Saturdays, and I think you and I were also introduced by one of the members in your Power in the Pen. I forget her name, but we have, you know, emails that are so old. And but there were, it was Bruce George, and then there was one of your editors.
Oh, okay. I can't even remember which one right now. Okay.
I have no idea. But one day we're going to have a round circle where I can catch you on a Saturday when you're there and bring the group on the air. I would love to hear from, you know, all of your perspectives. Yeah, we'll set that up. We'll definitely set that up. Well, what did you want to share this evening? And, you know, before we do, we're going to take a couple of commercial breaks, catch our breath, and I'll let everyone know that you are tuned in to Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival 2023. This is episode 2. I am Beverly Black. I'm the creator of Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul, international family brand, and my guest this evening, Kathy Wright Lewis, director of Power in the Pen. And that describes this woman to a T, because there is real power in her pen. And we're going to hear more from her right after this message, or these messages, I should say.
You know the name.
You saw their story.
You remember the hits.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the legendary Shylight featuring Marshall Thompson.
For over 50 years, the legendary Shylights have performed all over the world to standing room only crowds.
And now here's a brand new book
from the only original remaining member of this fabulous group.
The book is entitled Last Man Standing by Marshall Thompson, which chronicles the group's rise to fame with 2 number one hits and dozens of Billboard top 10 hits.
The Shylights were a force to be reckoned with. Last Man Standing is the story of a personal side of a man who sang about love, romance, and dreams. It will have you laughing out loud one moment and tearing at your heartstrings the very next. Last Man Standing by the legendary Marshall Thompson. Available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and eBooks.
All right, welcome back live on Tribe Family Channel. And this is Beverly Black. I am the creator, host, and CEO. And we're going to hear from one of our other sponsors.
Ever wanted to get away from it all? Maybe an inexpensive honeymoon, or even a second honeymoon, or just a mini vacation for the two of you? Now you can. You can go to the Shylights' home, away from home, when they're not on tour. It's called the Shylights Dream Castle Villa, where you can relax in luxurious surroundings, where the staff and all amenities are at your full disposal. Their private gated villa offers 24-hour on-property security. Dream Castle Villa is just 20 minutes away from the newly constructed International Airport in Montego Bay, Jamaica. Enjoy incredible views of the Caribbean Sea and the Iron Shore Golf Course. The Shylights Dream Castle Villa is a relaxing, soothing, and romantic experience that's excellent for small private weddings, wedding renewals, engagements, anniversaries, or just a mini vacation for two. For reservations, visit their website at dreamcastlevilla.com or call toll-free at 888-747-9802 and see what other luxuries await you. Relax, just like the Shylights at The Shylights Dream Castle Villa, and hold on to your dreams.
And we definitely want to congratulate the Shylights for 64 years in entertainment. The Last Man Standing, Dr. Marshall Thompson, is the host, along with me, yours truly, Beverly Black, of Soul School Music with Marshall Thompson. We will be starting season 7 next month, February 11th, to celebrate not only the honorary doctorate degree, but the Presidential Medal of Freedom and his residency here in Las Vegas at the Rio inside the Duomo Hotel and Casino. So big shout out to Marshall Thompson, the godfather of vocal groups of the Shylights. We also have a book dropping that is named after the show, Soul School Music. The foreword is by Dr. Otis Williams of The Temptations. That will be dropping June 1st, Black Music Month. So stay tuned to our post. We post on facebook.com/ Tribe Family Channel. And again, we are a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand. So these books will be coming out of Gumbo for the Soul Publications. And we are back with my guest, Kathy Wright Lewis, Director of Power in the Pen. And she is going to give us a taste of that power out of one of her books this evening. So go ahead, Kathy, the floor is all yours.
Okay, thank you so much. I am reading from Mariah Seed, 20th anniversary. A little before this part, passion, now the story is an allegorical story, so passion is passion. Justice is justice. Brother is brother, okay? So find Deuce has been murdered. An eight-year-old boy has been murdered, which had actually happened in Harlem at this year. This is like at this time about 1964. And it trickled down to Brownsville and people were rioting. Within the next 10 minutes for Trey, delirium and oblivion had set in. My brother's dead. Slowly rang in his head, but his mouth could only whisper, "My brother's dead. I'm responsible for my brother, and my brother's dead." His mother's voice resounded as he recalled and relived her scolding him when Deuce had been lost during a summer day camp trip to Coney Island. He could see Passion's face, her disappointment in him, her fire. "You're the oldest," she had screamed. "You are responsible for your brother whenever I am not around. Is that clear? You are your brother's keeper." His face became contorted, cringing in contagious pain as he drooped his head and resigned. "My brother's dead," he whimpered. Trey had begun crying aloud, unashamedly moaning and mourning. He could see Deuce standing before him, that charismatic grin and always looking exciting, look in his eyes, his woolly afro and his skinny arm holding on to the loved appendage that ironically caused his death, his basketball. It was worn and beaten with only a faded line left encircling the brown sphere. It was tucked underneath his arm, and you would have had to been the best on the block to get it from him. Trey was crying, then smiling, shaking his head almost violently at the ghost of his awkward, lovable, incredible brother standing before him as he had always, ready to play ball. "I want my brother," he sobbed like a baby. "I want my brother." Trey reached out as if he could actually touch the memory. He drew back his empty hand and wrapped his arms around himself, pretending to hug Deuce as he had earlier. He sat there rocking, trying to understand how he could go on without his brother, the only one who really knew him, the only one with whom he could share his fears and nightmares of brother the junkie, of being killed like their father and grandparents, of losing his mother. He reached again for his best friend and baby brother who was now eternally untouchable. The many bystanders cried with him. Some touched him. Some spoke softly, attempting to console Trey's crippled heart. One elder sister was so moved that she went as far as to cradle him in her arms as if he was her own newborn baby. His spirit appeared just that broken. At last, Papa Joe was seen carrying Trey. It was assumed that he took the grief-stricken and shocked boy home, but Papa Joe felt it best to take him to his secret quarters, far away from the madness. He held Trey tightly and caressed the small 13-year-old who had fainted in his grandfather's arms the second he picked him up. A tear spilled from the old man's eye after he was forced to blink. He had carried justice in his arms this way when he was 13, too. A fly ball had hit him when he was watching a baseball game at the park and was knocked unconscious. Papa Joe wished Deuce were only unconscious, too. Hell of a rite of passage for a black man, he thought. Damn. Papa Joe checked the time as he flicked the channels on his black and white 9-inch TV set. His mind kept replaying the scenario in the record shop. Goddamn cops, he whispered to himself as if someone could hear. Goddamn pigs, a half snarl and a half frown held up his tears. It was now 6 o'clock and he was flicking from channel to channel to see if the neighborhood was still standing. He was distracted by the ruffling sheets behind him. You up, boy? He asked softer than he used to. Papa Joe's heart was still kind of stuck in his throat. He sighed deeply, subconsciously shook his head in despair and turned back to the television. He couldn't stop thinking that there must have been something that he could have done to prevent this, something he could be doing to protect his family, which he had somehow failed. He had been a hero to so many and on so many other occasions, but he couldn't protect his own from their unpredictable fates. He was a war hero, had stopped a lynching in 1928 and rid the village of a butcher in 38, but the devil had still beaten him. After sleeping for 3 hours, Trey had begun to stir. No, he forced the unconsciousness to return when he heard himself crying out, not wanting to wake up. Flashes of Deuce's dead body, his head full of hair soaked in blood, and the cop who shot him standing there, waving his gun, unsure whether to aim it at himself or at the angry crowd, were ultra-vivid, inerasable images in his head. Put that gun down, boy, Papa Joe had told the cop. No one here is going to hurt you. We know it was an accident. Bullshit, an infuriated neighbor had yelled. Let's take him out. An eye for an eye. An eye for with shade stood behind the man speaking and showed that he agreed. The cop stood there shaking, still waving his firearm nervously. He couldn't even hear Papa Joe speaking as calmly as he possibly could, explaining to the crazed cop that he had to surrender his weapon, that he was now a murderer and had just killed his grandson, that he had started a riot and had to be instrumental in defusing it. Brown's Village would erupt. I'm going to stop there. Is that...
You know what? Now, I don't even have the words, but the outro to this show is dedicated to you and what you just read, and I definitely want to make sure that you let our listeners know where we can get your books. And if they can be autographed, that's all the better. They'll pay extra. Mm-hmm. But you can definitely tag the post that we are in on social media, and I'd be happy to share. And I'm just so thankful to you for making this show what it is. This is what real literature and writing is, because art mirrors life, and what you just read surely mirrors the type of life that a black man somewhere in this land has experienced, whether it be fiction or from Kathy's imagination, or whether it's nonfiction. It mirrors life in just about every neighborhood. Because that's our reality. And you know what I could also appreciate is that you would write so deep, because our children, they are not crazy. They know, they see, they hear. And it's a shame that, you know, to be growing up in a time where there's so much violence, or where there's, you know, drills for, you know, being trying to stay safe to keep from getting shot at school. And so they're having to take the bull by the horn and take the reins, if you will, because they do not feel protected by adults and society right now. So the level and the depth of which you write, these children, they're actually ready for that level of deep thought and reflection, because this is what's happening. It is a reality, and it gives the emotions permission to to be recognized.
So
you are definitely an amazing writer, and we have chewed up this hour, Kathy. I want to thank you again, you know, for being here, for being a sponsor of in good company with many that are keeping us on the air, Tribe Family Channel Literary Festival 2023. This is Season 5, Episode 2. Now, where can our listeners find you before I play this outro that I want you to enjoy, because it definitely identifies, and we did not mention this man's name, but it applies, and as soon as you hear it, you're going to know his voice. You're going to know who he is.
Okay, all right. Well, I thank you again for having me. It's always my pleasure. I believe we have to support each other. One hand washes the other. Both hands wash the face, my mother-in-law used to say. And we need it all times. You can find my books on KathyWrightLewis.com. No hyphen, just straight through like that. Or Power in the Pen, www.org. The books are on that website as well. So KathyWrightLewis.com or PowerInThePen.org. That way I can sign them. If you get it through Amazon, I can't sign it, but you can get them on Amazon too. But if you go through the websites, I can sign them and send them directly to you. And thank you once more.
All right.
And thank you to everyone who's listening. I appreciate your time.
And I definitely appreciate you. I will definitely be visiting your website so that I can get my signed copies and support you as an author as well. Thank you for your undying support. You have kept us on the air through the years. This is not, new. We have been in touch for years, and yes. I just really want to let you know that I appreciate your support. And we'll be looking forward to having you back and having your Power in the Pen round table, circle with the other writers in your group. All right.
Beautiful.
Well, we'll be in touch via email.
Friday.
And thank you so much. All right.
Thank you, Kathy.
Blessings
yes.
as well, sis. And this song going out is for you, so hang tight. And ladies and gentlemen,
okay.
I want to thank you for tuning in to Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival 2023, Season 5, Episode 2. That was the phenomenal Kathy Wright Lewis. And tomorrow's guest will be Pastor Kevin Wayne Johnson. He is the founder and CEO of Writing for the Lord Ministries. He is a thought leader and an upstanding man of honor. So be sure to tune in again tomorrow, same Tribe Family Channel, same Tribe Family number. I'm Beverly Black, and that's going to do it. You can also catch me at GumboForTheSoulInternational.com, Facebook.com/Tribe Family Channel, and we will talk to you soon. This one's for you, Kathy. Peace, sis.
All right. Oh, listen, thank you. Peace.
And moonshots and blame it on the happiness. Money we made it, yeah, but before we see it, they take it. Yeah,
they
make you wanna holler at them. The way they do your life make you wanna holler at them. Finding
What the ghetto people mean when they say living behind walls? Well then put on your best suit, white shirt and tie, and run on downtown to stand in line for a job washing dishes that you may not qualify. Walk a big hole in a brand new pair of shoes and you've had your first look at the inner city blues. Go looking for a place to live, but all the while remember what lurks behind the devil's smile. Are we stupid or just naive that we continue to believe money can buy us anything, including a slice of the American dream? Yeah, answer ads in the paper about houses for sale and get treated like Charles Manson out on bail. When you start to get frustrated by the tactics they use, you'll recognize the feeling. It's the inner city blues. Yeah, it makes you want to holler sometimes and throw up both your hands. And haven't you ever wondered about why some brothers and sisters were down and out, receiving their sympathy from a bottle of wine, or worse yet, old homicide, living their lives in a glassine bag, or facing the mysteries of terminal gag? Some of our brothers parading in drag, another set of victims too whipped to choose. Yeah, you can recognize that, that's the inner city blues. Makes you want to holler sometimes and throw up both your hands. To see sweet sisters, the blossoms of our African tree, profiling on the corner, talking about 10 and 3. Because in spite of all the money we made and taxes we paid, the woman was looking at hungry babes and some decisions had to be made. Could you tell her it's better to go to your grave as a slave or the minimum wage? Well, I hardly think so, but makes you want to holler sometimes and throw up both your hands. What happens when people start to feel they have nothing to lose, 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 nothing to lose? Did you ever hear about Mark Essex and the things that made him choose to fight the inner city blues? Yeah, Essex took to the rooftops guerrilla style and watched while all the crackers went wild. Brought in 600 troops out here, brand new to see them crushed with fear. Essex fought back with 1,000 rounds and New Orleans was a changing town. And rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat was the only sound. Yeah, bring on the stoner rifles to knock down walls. Bring on the elephant guns. Bring on the helicopters to block out the sun. Yeah, made the devil want to holler because 8 was dead and 12 was down. And cried for freedom or a brand new sound. New York, Chicago, Frisco, L.A., justice was served and the unjust were afraid. Cause after all the years and all the fears, brothers were alive, the courage found, and spreading them goddamn blues around. Yeah, make you wanna holler black people and hold up both your hands and say liberation.
Crime is increasing and I'm sick of happy policing. Panic is spreading. Yes, make you wanna holler sometimes and throw up both of your hands. Make you wanna holler sometimes and throw up in both your hands. Throw up both your hands.
Family Channel.